This episode of the Beauté Industry Podcast was brought to you by Forest Salon Software. Join 6,000 plus happy salons using Forest to increase bookings and revenue today. Hello and welcome to the Beauté Industry Podcast, your online support community for the professional beauty industry. I am your host, founding director of Beauté Industry, Tamara Reid. Here, we are closing the competitive gap and speaking your language. This is a platform created and dedicated to the professional beauty industry, valuing community over competition. We serve to help connect you with inspiration from industry experts, expand your knowledge through educational pieces, and bring you the latest in product and technology innovation. This is Beauté Industry. Today, my guest is Emma Hobson of the International Dermal Institute. Emma is a skin and body care specialist who's been in the industry for over 30 years, with experience ranging from business owner, spa director, college principal to corporate director, working in countries across Asia, Europe and the USA. Emma has collected an extensive range of knowledge with definite global perspective. In 1993, Emma joined the International Dermal Institute, otherwise known as the IDI, in the UK, the world's largest and most influential postgraduate education centre for the professional skin therapist. Since 1995, Emma has been heading up the education department as Director of Education for the Asia Pacific region out of their office in Sydney. Emma's area of expertise encompasses dynamic business strategies, leadership and team management, a great insight into future trends of skincare, wellness and spa industry, all of which have led her to speak on many platforms around the world, including radio and television interviews, and interviewed speaker for the national and international industry events. As a company spokesperson and the go-to expert for IDI and Dermalogica, you'll see many of Emma's articles across various media channels. Emma's many accolades include being chosen by Beauty Directory as one of Australia's 10 most influential people in the health and beauty industry today, which is beyond special. An exceptional mention to Dermalogica for their 25-year anniversary in Australia this year. A very special celebration as Emma came to Australia 25 years ago to launch and establish Dermalogica and Dermalogica Education. From the International Dermal Institute, today we welcome Emma Hobson.
Thank you, Tamara. It's very lovely to be here today.
Ah, so lovely to have you. I'm so excited that in the midst of everything that's going on, we have some time to finally catch up and record this episode together.
I know, I think my schedule's been a little tight recently, but I'm really looking forward to having the chat today.
Ah, brilliant. So Emma, we start our episodes the same way each week by asking our guest when and how and why they entered into the beauty industry. So where did it all begin for you?
It all began in England because I'm British. I always wanted when I was at school to be in a job that wasn't sitting in an office, which is quite ironic as we sit here right now at our computers. And there was a college that I'd seen advertised called Champneys, and it was a health retreat. And you could learn not only beauty therapy and aromatherapy and reflexology, but you learn fitness and diet and health. And it just, I was attracted to it like a magnet. And that's how I got into the industry. I went to Champneys, just knew from day one, this was going to be my profession for life.
How incredible. I don't think many people know straight away what they want to do, but that's just fascinating for you that it was already so ingrained in you after seeing that kind of wellness and health aspect that this was going to be your career choice.
Yeah. I was just so fortunate. When I think because it's so diverse an industry, there's so many different pathways that you can take. It has allowed you, you know, when you start off as a skin therapist working in a treatment center, you know, you can dream big. You can think of all the different places that you can go and it never limits you. And I think that's why I've stayed in the industry my entire life.
Amazing. Yeah, I got a little bit stuck when I was a therapist, and I thought I can just be a therapist. And I guess back in those days, there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, now we have kind of niche and you can do brows and you can do skin, you can do body. But I got a little bit stuck until one day I finally realized there are so many opportunities out there for our career. And then, you know, traveling on through to educator and sales and multi-site management and things like that. I think sometimes we're limited by what our thoughts allow us to believe, and we don't actually realize the big wide world that's out there.
Absolutely. I think as often if I go to colleges, and I love speaking to college students who are studying our industry, I love to hopefully inspire them just to think, you know, dream big. Don't limit yourself to what you just see around you. You know, stretch your imagination and you can go anywhere and do anything.
Brilliant. So, Emma, what was your first job then after coming out of Champneys?
Interestingly, one of the reasons why I wanted to be in this role as well is I wanted to be able to travel. I wanted a skill set that I could work anywhere in the world. And this is certainly one of those skill sets that you can do that. So my first job was actually in Hong Kong. I did quite well at college, and my parents, as a reward, said that I could get a trip to Hong Kong for a holiday. And I got to Hong Kong. Oh my goodness, wow. I'm from a small village in Yorkshire, and to go to Hong Kong was just mind-blowing. And I just loved it. And literally within 10 days of being there, I'd landed myself a job. I know I phoned my mum up and told her I wasn't coming home, and I was only 18 at the time, and she burst into tears. And I said, "Don't worry, Mum, I'm going to be fine." And my first job was in Hong Kong. It was, I've always had quite the gift of the gab, I guess. I've got quite a bit of self-confidence in chatting my way into things. And my first job was to actually set up a salon in a sports club, a ladies' tennis club. I didn't know anything about managing a business, so I went in blind. Luckily, my mum had been an entrepreneur. She got her own couple of businesses, so I had learned a bit from my mum of how to run a business. And my first job was to manage, run, and set up this lovely salon.
Oh my goodness. I mean, talk about getting thrown in the deep end. You haven't just gone straight into performing treatments back to back, but you've got into opening up a salon and management. How did you navigate your way through that?
I'd love to say easily, but that would not be the truth. It would have, you know, if only the education had been out there that is available today, then I would have not made the mistakes that I'd made. But, you know, we all learn by our mistakes. What we don't know. And so we go in blindly and you just do the best that you can. I made errors, but you pick yourself up and you realize, well, okay, that's not working. And you move on. I made an error probably at first. I employed a girlfriend of mine, and we were quite close friends, and having to be her boss and a friend was probably an error, but we worked our way through it.
I've been there myself. I know exactly how that feels. So you're 18, you're in Hong Kong. How long did you stay there, and where did you go to from there?
I was there about 2.5 years, and then I got homesick and I decided, okay, it was time to go back to Blighty, go back to the cold of England. And then I set up my own business in Yorkshire. And as much as I loved being at home in Yorkshire, as I said, I am from a small village, and I just actually felt, you know, this, I felt confined in doing what I was doing. It didn't stretch me enough, or it wasn't big enough, I think, I don't know if I didn't feel quite grounded there, but it just wasn't right. And so I headed down south, and I was very, very fortunate to actually get a role at Champneys. I was asked by my former principal if I would like to go back and teach. and do my teacher training qualifications at the same time. And I just thought, oh, yes, please. And so I went back to teach, actually, where it all began at Champneys.
Ah, incredible. Did that feel like a full kind of circle moment for you in that you studied there and now you're back there teaching? Yeah, it would have been so, so special, I can imagine.
It was. That's when I really thought I'd found my element. I loved teaching. It just is a natural part of me. And I love the students and I love the experience of teaching and learning. And I love doing my teacher training. So I thought, okay, now I think I've found my niche, my home.
Right. And so what was it about teaching, or, you know, what still is it, I guess, because you're still teaching and educating, that really lights you up inside, that you found there at Champneys?
I think with teaching, you're very fortunate because you can create some great relationships with people. I think we all love helping people. That's why we go into this industry. You know, it's by nature who we are. We like to support and help and nurture our customers and our clients. So I think that's a huge element in teaching as well. Partaking knowledge to give somebody else a skill set and seeing that they're growing and they're enjoying it and they get better at something, you can't really kind of, you know, you can't go past that reward.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And so when did your interaction with the IDI come about? How did that even present itself to you?
So after I was at Champneys, I actually moved over to the south of Spain and got a job as a director of a college down there. Then I went back into therapy, actually, in between that. I was very fortunate to be asked to open a 6-star spa on the beachfront in a beautiful hotel in Spain. And I'd completed that project. It was about to open. And very sadly, my mum got terminally ill. So I decided that I'd move back to the UK until she passed and was there for my mum. And then I didn't feel ready that I wanted to go back to Spain. You know, my family and my sister and everybody was in the UK. And I started to look around for a job in England. And very fortunately, I found the International Dermal Institute. And I'd never come across anything quite like it before. The level of education, the different types of courses that they taught. When I went for my interview, the passion of the people who were interviewing me for what they did and the company, I found it just completely inspiring. Then I learned about Jane Werwind. They actually sent me a tape of her whilst I was driving my car down to London. I listened to Jane speaking about the reason why she'd set up the International Dermal Institute. And I thought, okay, wow, this woman is amazing. And if I could work for a company for her, I would be honored and I would be very, very fortunate.
Incredible. How special is that? Oh my goodness. I want to go back one step though. Being in Hong Kong and then Spain, how did you navigate the language changes? I think it's every therapist's job to go work somewhere else in the world, but how do you do that once you're there?
Yeah, well, Hong Kong's fortunate because at that time it was still sort of colonial Hong Kong, so a lot of people spoke English. And I did work in a recreation club, the latest recreation club in Hong Kong that was English speaking. So to be honest, that really wasn't too hard. I learned a little bit of Chinese enough to get taxis and food and bits and pieces, but Cantonese is not the easiest language to master. In Spain, I was more fortunate. My father actually moved to Spain when I was about 9 years of age. So I'd spent a lot of time in Spain already, you know, holidays from school. So that was much easier for me. And I just had an intensive course of Spanish. Each and every day I had to go for a couple of hours of Spanish and just pick up my skill set so that I was good enough to be able to converse with our customers.
Incredible. So life was much easier when you got back to England and started working with the IDI.
It certainly was. At least you're in your own language as well. It was. But the, you know, all the experience that I had previously really helped me at the International Dermal Institute because, of course, it was postgraduate education. Mm. The first time I'd actually been working with our customers and our, you know, our students who had already been in the industry either for quite some time. Obviously, some students are new into the industry. So as the, I think that's when I really found that you learn. One of the things that teaching, particularly in postgraduate education, you probably learn more from the students than they learn from you if you have your antenna up. You know, there's a vast amount of skill set, and when you collaborate together in a classroom and people share ideas, I think that's when we really prove ourselves to be a fantastic industry where we support each other, share ideas and learn from each other, not just the teacher in front of the room.
Couldn't agree more. I think learning in the classroom is always, well, now, you know, we take things virtually, but always a two-way street. You know, teachers can only kind of expand their knowledge when they're asked a challenging question, perhaps that they have to go away and research themselves. So I absolutely love that you've mentioned that. What was that role at the International Dermal Institute that you applied for and that you worked in there in the beginning?
So I started off as a trainer. My role was to teach the International Dermal Institute workshops. It was also to teach Dermalogica, obviously, because Dermalogica was part of the International Dermal Institute. Not so big in those days. It was more focused on the International Dermal Institute, so a lot of generic education. I traveled around the country. We took our IDI, the International Dermal Institute, on the road. I also used to go and teach at the undergraduate colleges. We would take the International Dermal Institute and sort of, I guess, demonstrate to students when you finish your undergraduate training, don't think that education stops there. You need to carry on, you need to keep on learning. And the way to excel, you know, when we leave college, we only have the foundation of our knowledge. You know, we have to build our house of knowledge upon that when we actually leave. And the International Dermal Institute was there to support everyone from day one when they leave college to when you've been out in the industry for 20 or 30 years. We all have to keep growing. We all have to keep, we can't have the same knowledge that just regurgitates the same thing 25 years over. We have to each and every day try to learn something new to keep on top of a very, very fast-paced industry.
Yeah, you're 100% correct there. And now, especially with the changes that we're seeing, our clients are so savvy. They know a lot about ingredients because they have Dr. Google in their back pocket that they can whip out at any time. And we're seeing a lot of these clients come into our spaces now and ask us questions. So you're right about that education and just continually to evolve that. I'm wondering then how you moved, I think this is like the biggest jump in anyone's career, from almost, you know, a state trainer or, you know, a national trainer into something that is titled global educator. I mean, what does that process look like? I think you must get asked this question all the time.
The first thing when I was in the UK, I had a fantastic boss, Steve Kurland, who really believed in me. It was such a tremendous boss to have. And he was charged from the UK to open up the Dermalogica and the International Dermal Institute in Australia. And he put it out to me and said, Emma, what do you think? How would you be interested to go to Australia? I know you don't know anybody there. It's not set up. So it is literally going to Australia, setting up the education department, help set up the whole, you know, support the operations and set up for Dermalogica. When you go to Australia, no one's ever heard of it. There's, you know, derma to who, derma to what. there's no real vast array of postgraduate education. So you'll be a kind of bit like a pioneer. And because I love travel and I love being given, I love being stretched and given opportunities and to be challenged, I said, yeah, I'll go. Of course I'll go. And willingly. And the agreement was love it or hate it. If I wanted to stay with the company, I'd have to stick it out for 2 years And if I didn't like it after 2 years, that was okay. I could have a transfer back to the UK to resume, you know, a position there. I thought, oh, look, 24 months, it's easy. And, you know, when you're still young and you're single, you think, I can do that very easily. So my first role was in setting up the education department and spreading the word through. I travelled endlessly around Australia spread the word about the International Dermal Institute and obviously Dermalogica at that time. And I was the only educator. We were in Woollahra in this tiny place. So every day I had to have the theory desks out in the morning. And then at lunchtime I'd have to pack all the theory desks down and then bring out the professional treatment beds and set up in the afternoon. And it was a fabulous time. Some of my favourite memories are actually of those times of starting off. We had a lot of therapists who were just amazing, the trust and the faith that they had to come on board with us and to, you know, take their learning with the International Dermal Institute. So then that grew and grew and grew and the staff grew, and then we went from one location to another location and another location. So, you know, we spread our wings around Australia over the years. And as we grew, I guess my experience of what I did grew. And so then I was asked by the company if actually I would move into a role where I looked after the Asia Pacific region, which means, you know, all of Asia, Australia and New Zealand. I got an international team to support me as well. So I had two teams running simultaneously, one being the domestic team and one being the international team. And then, of course, it moved to being director of education as again, that region has grown and my role has grown over that time. There I am today.
Yes. Emma, that is absolutely insane to think about. You brought the International Dermal Institute and Dermalogica over to Australia. I mean, that's not, no one does that.
Well, I was very fortunate to be given the opportunity, and I work for a company that has been so good to me. The opportunities that I've been afforded, I wouldn't be the person today. I wouldn't have the skill set. I wouldn't have had the opportunities. I've traveled everywhere in the world. I have friends in just about every country because of it, who I've worked closely with. I've met incredible business owners. I've been asked to speak on many platforms around the world. And all of that has been provided to me by the opportunity, the company that I work for. So I will always be eternally grateful.
After the break, Emma shares with us how she keeps up to date and inspired by the industry to create and design Dermalogica's treatments, and two, the Dermalogica difference, which has retained Emma for 25 years of employment. But first, a word from today's beauty partner. Community, I know many of you are working on your business at the moment, and perhaps that has involved you thinking about changing software providers and looking at stepping up your marketing game. Well, our friends at Forest Salon Software are offering free setup and migration for a limited time only. This means that you can simply move your software over to Forest for free. And yes, you heard that correctly. Contact the team at Forest today to arrange a free bespoke consultation by clicking the link over in our show notes. Thank you so much to Forest Salon Software for making this episode of the Beauty Industry Podcast possible. And now back to Emma. I'm wondering, is there a normal day in your life, or what does one do in the shoes of a global educator?
No, there is no normal day. At the moment, it's probably been the most normal I've had it in years and years. A day can be many different things. A day can be getting up and going on a plane to Malaysia, presenting in Malaysia, working with the directors there, working through their strat plans. It can be presenting to the media, influencer events, presenting to their staff, their customers, getting on a plane again and then flying to Hong Kong and doing the same, and then getting on a plane and going to maybe Singapore. being away from home for probably around about 2 weeks at a time. At the same time, trying to be at my emails at night so I could still have an Australia to run at home. Coming home, met maybe a few days in the office. I'm on their leadership team, the executive team for our company. So it's connecting with them, making sure that education supports every department. So it, a very busy admin day. Of course, I have my team. And, you know, being the leader of my team is hugely important. So being present for my team, being there to support them and mentor them and guide them and give them what they need to develop in their roles. It can be flying down to Melbourne to present at a college, to speak to their students, traveling around Australia as I do a vast amount as well. So no, honestly, no day really is the same. So I'm most fortunate that I'm not in Groundhog Day ever really. I love the diversity. I'm so fortunate to never be bored. I never have gone to work in 27 years in this company and thought, I'm bored.
Wow, that is so, so special. I'm sure you get asked a lot, how did you get there? And I want a job like yours. And one day I want to have your position. But I'm wondering if you can share with us, what kind of skills are you required to have to actually run this role? I'm sure, you know, it sounds very glossy on the surface. I'm flying here, I'm speaking there, I'm presenting, but in the back end, I'm sure you're like a duck swimming along, just traveling your feet at a million miles an hour underwater. What kind of skills perhaps don't people see behind the scenes that you have to possess?
I think you've got to be exceptionally organized. You have to be able to work on multiple shop projects at one time. You've got to be able to know your deadlines, know who you have to support. You need to be able to look at the big picture of the business and know what you have to do to get to the big picture. You have to know what the goals of the company are, both financially as well as with, you know, with all the other goals that are set for us. And you've got to know how you and your team are going to perform those goals. So strategy, you need to be able to strategize. You need to be able to prioritize. You certainly, I think, need to have an enormous work ethic. I work exceptionally hard. It doesn't feel like hard work. It's not like poor me. Look at the long hours that I do, but you have to be prepared that, you know, in any role like this, you've got to work very, very hard. Leadership skills are very important. Without a team, without supporting your team, having time for your team, listening to them, having empathy for them, for the, you know, various situations they are in life, is essential. So, you know, they're just some of the skills. I have to remain relevant. I've got to make sure that I read a lot of what's happening in the industry. I go to seminars, I go to events, I follow other industry leaders, both inside our industry and outside of our industry. Because if I lose my edge, if I lose being relevant, and if I lose that desire to seek knowledge, then I can't pass that on to anybody. So there's a lot of work in the background to make sure that I upskill myself and I remain relevant as well.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you, because I know one aspect of your role is helping the creation and development of treatment protocols and sequences. Where do you take your inspiration from in doing this? Because sometimes we can have a creative block or we feel a little bit stagnant. So what inspires you to help be the creative director behind the scenes here?
Well, I think like all of us, we still never go past loving treatments and loving skincare and designing things. I love creating new things. I love creating new curriculum. I particularly love creating new treatments. To be honest, Tamara, sometimes where I find inspiration is actually going backwards as well as going forwards. I think sometimes in our industry, we've lost a few essential skills along the way, or things that we used to do that we haven't done in a while. So sometimes revisiting things that used to be popular or used to work, I also think is important, as well as looking at the new things and new technologies and how can that technology go with that particular ingredient, and what could you do and how could you do it, and how can we personalize things so that for the client things never get boring, for the therapist things never get boring, that it remains exciting and different and we get better results and different results. And I think just pushing the edges of what we see as normal in our treatments, all of those things excite me. All of those things are what drives me to create something, you know, something new.
How special. How do you ensure consistency? I mean, you've got 20 staff there, 4 training locations. As we know, therapists, we can shut the door and we can just have a little fun of our own and not follow protocols and procedures and things like that. How do you ensure that your team and the therapists who you're working with do perform a consistent sequence or treatment?
I think consistency first starts with yourself. I have to be consistent. I think as leaders, what you have to do is whatever you expect from your team, you have to first show yourself. So if I'm inconsistent, then I certainly can't expect anybody else to be anything other than that. So I need to be consistent in my messaging to my team. I need to be consistent in how I work with my team. I need to be consistent with the messaging, the protocols, the systems. We have a lot of protocols and we have a lot of systems. And the reason why we have them is that they work and it allows everybody to be able to do their job very well. That said, I constantly ask my team, what is not working? Let's get rid of what doesn't work. Let's introduce things. Can we do things better? And I think part of consistency is always looking and being good at what you do and having things running effectively is always revisiting, is it still working and is it still, can we do it better or is it still relevant anymore? So that's one of the things. The reason why I have consistency is actually my team. I have a management team that are unbelievable and they follow the protocols, support the protocols, support the team. And then again, I have a group of team members who are outstanding. And I think that the support of each other, that everybody knows everyone is treated as individuals in our department and in the company. But everybody's treated equally, even though they are treated differently. You have to be fair, but you have to always make sure when you've got a staff, be it 20, 40, or 10, or 5, that there's that individual way of looking after people, but always consistently being equal across the board with those people as well.
Yeah. And as you mentioned earlier, it's all about that leadership, isn't it? It's following by example or leading by example rather and showing people how to do things rather than just telling them how to do it and yes. Micromanaging. And I guess that comes back really to, that old Chinese proverb of the fish rots from the head down. And you've been with the International Dermal Institute, as you mentioned, for 27 years. Yep. I mean, people get bored these days after 2 months, 2 years in a role. How has the brand kept you stimulated for such a long period of time? Clearly, they're incredible people to work with and incredible leaders.
Yeah, as I said before, I'm forever grateful. I am so lucky because I work for a really progressive company. You know, Jane Werwind, 4 years. I mean, the lady, if you don't know her or have heard of her, the woman's a legend. She's the most innovative, incredible, very futuristic individual. So we've been so fortunate to have a leader like that. And again, the leader now that we have is exactly the same. So we work for a company where innovation is rife. It's how we evolve. It's how we breathe in the company. So you never, I, I, though I have worked for the same company with the same core culture for 25 years and you know, we're all about the professional skin therapist, it always has been, what changes around us is innovation in treatments, innovation in ingredients, innovation in just in the background, all our IT and all of the support management systems and everything around us constantly is, how do we do it better? How do we change? How do we evolve? How do we grow? How do we remain leaders in education? And that is so exciting. So yeah. My job has evolved, changed. It's still, you know, everything is still relevant and we keep relevant. And so you never get tired. And even though I've been in the role for quite some time, as I said before, I'm never bored. It's exciting. It's changing. I don't know what my role is going to be this time next year. My role isn't the same as it was this time last year. What I do each and every day, what my team do. I have team members who've been with me for such a long time. They are outstanding. And I think, you know, the reason why we've had them for so long is exactly the same reason. They're not doing the same thing every day. They're constantly changing, learning, developing, growing, stretched. And who wants to leave a company like that? Not me.
No, not at all. I want to ask you about the shift that you mentioned there. And goodness me, I mean, the last couple of months have felt like years on end, and we are seeing so much change. We're seeing a large shift also as professional brands make their way into retail spaces and, you know, counters across the country and the industry. And you talk a lot about therapists and the language that they need to be using, and, you know, they need to be progressive in keeping up to date with trends and things like that. What can therapists do, or what do they need to know in order to kind of keep up with these trends and the change of the industry and the change of the climate, and just to make sure that they are always at the forefront of the industry and don't be succumbed to by retail spaces, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, I could spend a whole day on this subject, so I'll try to be as concise as I possibly can. First of all, I think we know we have to be competitive. You know, we need to embrace the competitive spirit of entrepreneurship and being in a retail environment. I think having goals, targets, incentives is paramount in every single business. Training in the retail for your retail skills continually. The environments out there in the retail space change, and so we have to change in the same manner. I think one of the things that we have to be really confident about is that we offer something unique that no one else can. And that is our human connection that we have with our clients and our customers. The trust and the loyalty that we have with our clients and our customers that come into our business on a regular basis. We've got to use that to our absolute advantage. Never forget, they always use something on their skin. They're either buying it from a pharmacy or they're buying it from online, or they're buying it from a department store or wherever it may be, but they're using something. What we have to do is find out how to hook them to purchase it from us. So, you know, loyalty programs, making sure that, you know, you are doing your promotions, your gift with purchase, you are competing in that sense with the department stores, that you are always have a marketing calendar and you're running those marketing calendars. And so your loyalty programs, make sure that your loyalty programs work for you. Some loyalty programs can, you know, the old fashioned stamp, you know, putting a stamp on a card isn't going to work anymore. You've got to be much more sophisticated with your programs. But your expertise, the expertise that we have, no one can beat our expertise in what we do. And we have to sell and promote that. We need to get out of the back and into the front. More treatments and short treatments, doing skin lessons for our clients in the front, doing your facial analysis, you know, maybe with an observe machine at the front of your business, doing more in the front, just like they do in the retail space, creating theatre, creating excitement. We have to make our retailing areas at the front an enjoyable shopping experience. And, you know, let's face it, the majority of our customers are females in a lot of our businesses, and we love to shop. So give everybody that love of shopping experience. Make sure you've got plenty of, you know, promotional evenings on and events on and things that's constantly engaging your customer. And follow up with your sales. Make sure that you are keeping in contact with your customers who are purchasing from you. Don't let them just buy something and go home and that's the last you speak to them until they come in another month's time. There's so much that we can do. You know, making sure you talked about sustainability, making sure that you have a really good sustainable plan. It also might mean perhaps having a plan where you also support your local community, where you also give back. I think there's a lot of things in our space that we can do to keep our clients connected, make them feel loyal to shop local. I am an advocate of shopping local, and I think that we have to pull on our customers' heartstrings a little bit more about shopping local and coming into your local environment and your stores. What is it that makes your demographic of your customer? What are they interested in? What are they passionate about? Support their passions. Unite, have a united front and something that you can connect with your customers on an emotional level as well. Did I do that quite shortly?
Love it. Absolutely love it. I think it's all just about being really proactive, you know, and looking at the big guys who are doing it well. I mean, look at your David Jones, look at your Meyer, have a look at, not in terms of how they're performing a treatment as such, but look at their marketing campaigns, you know, have a look at their, you know, their EDMs. When you don't shop there, they send you an email, come back and shop with us. And just looking at the communication. I mean, if you look to people who are doing it well, you know, you can take inspiration from that. But it also too, it sounds like a lot of activation. So as you said, you know, maybe moving the LED into places in the lounge where people can see it, or creating retail activations where you can actually see 30-minute or 20-minute treatments and things like that, just to inspire that. I mean, when we see something being activated at a shopping center, what happens? Everyone is just drawn there. We don't even know what the activation is, but we're like, let's go have a look at it. I think if we create a bit more of that and just be proactive about that in our business, that will definitely put us on the right foot.
Absolutely. 100% agree with you on every single point. Spot on.
Thank you. So Emma, I want to think back to when you first entered the beauty industry, and now looking at the role you've got, what plans did you initially have? I mean, you said you always wanted to be in the beauty and wellness industry, but did you ever imagine that you would be titled global educator, traveling around the world with such an incredible role?
No. No, I didn't. I don't believe in luck. I do believe in hard work, and I believe in opportunity and grasping opportunities. I don't believe, though, that everything is just down to luck. So I didn't get here through luck. I got here through hard work and grasping opportunities. But I never imagined I would be as fortunate as I am today. For myself, I think I've got the best job in the world for what I do. And I think I work for the best company in the world, with the best job in the world, with the best team in the world. So life doesn't get much better than, I think, the position I'm in today. And I keep saying I'm eternally grateful for everything that I have.
Absolutely incredible. And one last question before I let you go today. What excites you about the future of the industry? We mentioned that so much is changing, and what we are looking like now is definitely not what 12 months ago looked like. What do you even imagine just the next 12 months, let alone the future to look like?
I see the next 12 months as a great opportunity. When we look, hygiene is going to be of paramount importance for moving forward. And the treatments that we do, how we perform them, how we engage with our customers in our space. And so therefore, I believe that the feeling of professionalism of our industry will heighten the perception by our customers of the professionalism of our hygiene standards, of how we perform, how we clean, how we run our businesses will only be elevated. I think it gives us a huge opportunity when I think of things like the dermal science degree, for example, that so many therapists are taking. Again, this elevates our industry with our knowledge, our expertise. So many people have spent this time very wisely doing education. So when we go back, we're going to have better educated, more skilled therapists out there working on customers. That can only be a good thing. More innovation, I think we'll look at, as I say, how we're performing treatments, what we're doing within the treatment. It will, revisiting what we do and making it better cannot be a bad thing. It can only be a good thing.
Definitely. I could not agree with you more. And even though in the midst of all of this, it sounds quite scary, we don't have a light at the end of the tunnel yet. We don't know what that's going to look like. But it actually excites me that we get to almost reinvent ourselves, you know, and I keep envisioning this space and this time as almost like we're cocooning and we're going to come out as butterflies rather than caterpillars is what we knew before, because we're getting the opportunity to work on our business, which we've never had. We're getting the opportunity to reconnect with people via phone calls and conversation, and that too transfers to our client. And we're doing a lot of self-care, a lot of reflection, a lot of self-love as well. And I actually feel quite excited for the other side.
But yes, so do I. And I think one thing we must never forget, we've just been starved of human connection for, it might be 2 months in our industry where people aren't going to be able to come for treatments. And we've certainly been starved of human touch and human connection in isolation, especially those people who live on their own. And we must never forget the importance of what we do in that area of human connection. It is our, I believe it's our key to success for the future. So when we do come back, understand the service that we are going to provide is more than a skin treatment. It always is more than a skin treatment, but it's never going to be bigger than it is when we go back, when people are yearning for that human connection and touch again. And we've got an important part to play in that. And I think it will make our industry even stronger than it's ever been before.
Absolutely. What a beautiful note to finish on. Emma Hobson, thank you so much for having this gorgeous chat with me this morning. I so appreciate your time.
Mara, it's been my absolute pleasure, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. Emma Hobson is someone I could listen to and talk to forever and still have further questions to ask her. Could you tell? Dermalogica, as we know it in Australia today, is a reflection of Emma's hard work, passion, and dedication, which I know many of you, as do I, appreciate and thank her for allowing us to experience. Though Emma has achieved some of the most incredible career highlights I've heard to date, is employed with one of the coolest jobs in the professional beauty industry, and is internationally renowned for her expertise, her ability to remain humble and appreciative of her role is something that I took away from today's conversation, and I hope you did too. If you would like to follow Emma as she travels the world and continues the education of therapists, you can do so by following her on Instagram at emmahobson_IDI and of course Dermalogica at Dermalogica Oz. That's AUS. If you're listening and loving today's episode, make sure you take a photo of your screen or show us how you're listening over on your stories by tagging Emma, Dermalogica, at Beauty Industry and myself at Tamara Shaw Reid so that we can see your support. By clicking subscribe in your podcast app or follow over on Spotify, you'll be kept up to date with every episode we drop. Or, of course, you can follow along with the conversation with 4,000 other industry community friends on our Facebook group by searching for Beauty Industry Facebook Community. Until next time, stay connected.